Hi, this is Daniel Garb of the Movies for CulturalMining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. It's the 1970s, and the Lee family, dad, mom, and three daughters, are living the typical immigrant experience in Toronto. A brash dad and a soft-spoken mom spend all their time in the family convenience store so the kids can study for school in their high-rise apartment tower. But everything changes when, seemingly out of nowhere, their mom dies by suicide, leaving only a few photos and silent memories. Now, decades later, one of these sisters has made a documentary about their hidden past. But there are no words to describe the shocking family history and generational trauma she unveils. The film's called There Are No Words and is written and directed by multiple award-winning Toronto-based documentary filmmaker Min-Suk Lee. She is known for her moving documentaries that bring crucial global political issues down to a personal scale. As in her doc Migrant Dreams, the last time I spoke with her on the show in 2016. Incorporating period news footage and photos with new interviews with her family's relatives and friends in Canada and Korea, as well as a shocking and revelatory talk with her father, There Are No Words is a highly personal, heart-wrenching look at the filmmaker's own family history. It's having its world premiere on Tuesday, September 9th at TIFF, and I'm very pleased to have Min-Suk Lee here with me digitally to tell us more about There Are No Words. Hi, Min-Suk.
Hi, Daniel. Thanks for inviting me to your show
again. So nice to see you again.
Yeah, great to see you.
So after all these years, why did you choose to make a film about your mom now?
I think I always knew I would be making a film about her. Without a doubt, there was a desire in my heart to be able to tell a part of her story. It's taken me 20 years. I think this is my ninth film. It's taken me a long time to feel like I could be emotionally ready, and then also creatively present. So those two work together. And I think the momentum, the thing that kind of kicked it into more than this constant thought that hovered in the background, I think what really kicked it for me was the urgency of COVID. I think a lot of people made very, critical, life-changing decisions when COVID happened. I'm one of those. And so for me, it was recognizing that my father, who is almost 90 now, would likely die soon. And COVID made his death seem imminent. Now he's that was 5 years ago, and I think there was this real starkness. And when I contemplated the idea of his passing, I was really shaken more than I understood, because I actually don't have an emotionally warm relationship with my father. I am his primary caregiver, and the two of us have this kind of a strained relationship, to be honest, but I do what is required as a caregiver, and I feel I've always done it in a perfunctory way. But when I was racked with sorrow at the prospect that he might die, I had to really reflect on what it was I was grieving. And it was like you open one door and another door and another door. And then I came to understand and realize, oh, I'm grieving my mom. I realized that my father was the only person alive in my life in this contemporary time, in this moment, who has any kind of living memory of who she was when she was young. who could tell me anything about her beyond just this like really foggy memories I had and I hold. And I realized, oh, if he were to leave and no longer be here, I would be bereft of any doorway into understanding who she was. And then that's, I think, what made me feel I need to do it now. I need to gather the resources I can, the creative, emotional, intellectual, all of that. Because it takes certainly quite a bit of fortitude to enter those questions.
So,
and
Mitsa,
I know I could never have had those questions. I could never have asked him those questions without the armature of a film, Daniel.
So could you talk about your memories of your mom and how much they differed from other people's memories of her?
My memories are very scant, and I have a notoriously bad memory. I have many gaps of just, you could call that like just this sort of spotty kind of chronic amnesia of key parts of my childhood. I think a lot of people who go through challenging moments, trauma, do experience these memory gaps. And for my mother, my memories were often shrouded, not just in the gaps, but also in a lot of emotional layers of fear and sadness and just a lot of intense emotions that it was scary to go into a room with those emotions. So I think genuinely I've managed to move forward in my life containing my mother in a heart locket box and feeling like that was the only way I could sort of, not break down constantly, just to have a really contained, managed distance. And so my memories of my mother were of a woman who was often, she worked a lot. So we had a variety store and I saw her working all the time. And if she wasn't working in the store, she was working at home. And there was the cooking, the cleaning, just the constant labor. I did not see a person with much pleasure or enjoyment, but I also saw someone who seemed quite shy and not comfortable in social spaces. And I attributed that to language. She didn't speak English fluently. And she had immigrated to Canada in her mid 40s or her early 40s. So that's a big chunk of your life. You've already lived in another country, your home country. Now you're coming to make a new life in Canada. And she struck me as someone who lived a very closed life. And then also angry. I would see her angry. I witnessed a lot of abuse in my family. She was subjected to physical abuse by my father. And so without a doubt, I didn't have the words to understand that as a child, but I recognized, I think, her as someone who wasn't strong, who didn't have strength to fight back. Either the strength to fight back my father or to fight back the circumstances of a world which assigned her a status of, inferiority. You know, like in Canada, without speaking English, I remember many times her being mocked, being subjected to racism, being dismissed, being someone who could not engage in the structures of power or also the social relations of power. And so that's the person I grew up witnessing. And it's funny, there was this book, Minor Feelings, that came out maybe 7 or 8 years ago. It really hit me hard. And there was a story that the author told. It's a memoir. And she described how she saw, I think it was her grandmother, going to the schoolyard to confront bullies. And then she realized, oh, this her grandmother didn't have what it took because the bullies just laughed at her grandmother. I had almost exactly the same memory. That's one memory I recall quite strongly. When we came to Canada, we were subjected to a lot of racism and bullying and came home afraid. And so my mother went to the schoolyard to confront the bullies. And the kids, they must have been in grade 2 or 3, 4, whatever. And I recall them standing. There was a look of a little bit of a shock, but then also contempt and then laughter, because my mother didn't speak English. So she was yelling at them in Korean. She was wearing slippers and wearing clothes that were, you know, just like immigrant clothes. The kinds of memories I had of my mother was of someone who was weak.
That's interesting, because in the film, when you visit Korea, they give an almost opposite impression of her, as very loud spoken. She says what she wants. She speaks back, and she's older. She was older than your dad, which is also very unusual. But moving on, I really like the way you combine Korean history with your personal history. And South Korea was basically an autocratic state supported by the U.S., who had 40,000 troops there. And for decades, it was ruled by authoritarian government. Can you talk about, because your dad talks about in the movie, your dad's personal involvement in that process, in that coup?
Yeah. So I just want to say one thing about how for you, you were struck at the dissonance between my own memories of my mother and then the stories that old neighbors shared of the woman that they remembered. You know, Daniel, that was something that amazed me. And certainly that was something I sought when making the film. Like, who was she? I couldn't imagine what a 20-year-old woman, you know, what my mother must have been like. And the stories I heard astounded me. And I actually had to hold myself back from thinking, you know, she sounded so incredibly fierce and tough, and like she didn't take any kind of, you know, she didn't take abuse from anyone. And she was this woman who most people assigned she was very, not even working class, she was lower than working class, and worked at the bus station, which was considered just this, like, very low in the social order. But she made do with her refusing to be pushed around. And they even had this very derisive nickname for her. I think the men must have coined it in the village, "I'm Sojung," which literally kind of translates to boss bitch. And, you know, obviously for myself, as someone who's often been very interested in counter narratives of resistance and how we fight power in our daily lives, that's a badge of honor. That's a nickname of honor. There was so much I learned. And so the gap between who she was and then who I experienced, to me, that is probably one of the saddest things about the story of my mother's life, of what happened, because my mother died in a tragic, very, very tragic and sad way. And her death demonstrated someone who had lost the will to fight. And yet she was this tremendous fighter. So it's this long arc of a journey that she had to go through to make that final decision. And that was pretty hard for me to understand and map out.
I'm sorry, Ms. Hook, but we're out of time for the radio show, but listeners can hear the rest of this interview online. I've been speaking with Min Suk Lee about her powerful new documentary, There Are No Words, having its world premiere at TIFF. This is Daniel Garb of the Movies each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and my website, culturalmining.com.